Hey, everybody, welcome to 80s Horror Podcast. I am Rebecca with my lovely co-host, Jonathan Moody.
Hey, how are you doing?
And we are talking about a movie that I picked. So we are toggling back and forth this year for every episode. And we both picked five very eclectic movies, might I say. Very wide array. And so I decided to start with one of my favorite movies of all time. American Werewolf in London.
I can tell why this is one of your favorite movies of all time.
And I know this is a podcast, but I do want to show John what my wonderful boyfriend got for me. He got me the NECA Ultimate Kessler. And it's probably really hard to see on the camera, but it actually has interchangeable heads. So it's the werewolf, but it's David's head. And then there's the head of the werewolf you can put on it. So I will eventually unbox this once I get over the honeymoon phase, but
of having it. Yeah. I get it.
You know exactly what I mean.
Well, I mean, are you one of those people that like to keep the stuff? Okay. As I can notice some of the stuff is out of the box in your background there, but like, like to keep everything out of the box or in the box?
It depends. Like, okay. So what you're looking at, of course, is my Barbie collection. I can't leave a Barbie in the box. I've got that weird Toy Story thing where I feel like a Barbie that wasn't open and played with didn't fulfill her like life's destiny or whatever. So I'm really weird about that. But when it comes to horror stuff, like NECA figures and stuff, a lot of times I do just leave them in the box because the way they have them in the box is perfect for display.
Right.
You know, I mean, most of them, because they kind of look like a VHS box. You open it up and it's, you know, they're organized the way they should be and everything. So I don't open them a lot, but I'm running out of room too. Every nook and cranny.
But so you're a really big fan of this movie. When was the first time you saw this movie?
Okay. I don't know when the first time I saw this movie was, but grandma here is going to tell you guys something. So this came out in 81. I would have been 5 years old. I wouldn't have seen it when it came out. I was scared of everything. Totally scared. Until Thriller came out, I really was scared of like anything horror. And then Thriller kind of broke me, like it did for a lot of kids of this generation. But when this movie was being made, like every night at 7:30, Entertainment Tonight was on the TV. And when this movie was being made, Entertainment Tonight did this whole thing about Rick Baker and this transformation and how, you know, how they were doing it and a little bit of behind the scenes, a little bit showing what it was like and everything. And I was super intrigued. Like, I was probably scared shitless at the time. But like, in retrospect, I was very intrigued that how much was going into it. And then I had a huge crush on David Naughton. When I was little, I don't know why. Yeah, all I really know him from is like the Dr. Pepper commercials. Yeah, I had a really big crush on him.
That's how like John Landis found him, apparently.
Yeah, and he also got fired from the Dr. Pepper commercials because he showed his wang in this. But
I did not know that's why he got fired. But all right, well, interesting.
But I was just very intrigued. I don't know the first time I saw it. And I don't know that I even like fell in love with it the first time I saw it. This is one of those movies that every time I watch it, I just fall more and more in love with it. And about 7 years ago at my local drive-in, because I am fortunate enough to have a local drive-in that supports indie horror and horror in general, 35mm preservation. I got to watch this at the drive-in on an original 35mm print that was theatrical rotation. Oh, and it was so super cool. Like, I just got goosebumps saying that.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome.
It was just, it's just really cool. Like, and this is one of those movies, like, there are so many movies, especially for horror fans, that you're like, oh man, I remember like Hellraiser. Like, it just scared the crap out of you when you watched it before. Now you watch it and like some of the like lament configuration, like when it shoots like lasers and shit out, it's just so bad now.
Right.
You know, you can still appreciate it, but you're like, wow, that's just gone leaps and bounds. This movie,
I mean, you look at the original Star Wars, I'm sure, like, right, you know, when it was unaltered by CGI and everything, it looked like crap back then. But like, that was, I mean, at that time, that was amazing. You didn't see anything like that. And then, you know.
But this is still a movie that the effects, I mean, the Oscar for special effects was created for Rick Baker. This is pretty much the advent. I mean, he, according to John Landis, and I don't know if this is true or not, he Rick Baker coined the term special effects makeup.
I saw that. And
I don't know if that's totally true. Yeah, one of the little vignettes.
I would say so, maybe, because even though we've had special effects people beforehand, even the people that did the makeup for like the original Wolfman and stuff like that, special effects makeup, I guess, was something that probably had not been used since maybe An American Werewolf in London and some other, because even in to go back to Star Wars, which Rick Baker did work on as well, the original Star Wars, the term special effects was not used in then.
Yeah, it's not like he invented the genre or the discipline. He just apparently coined the term.
Right.
But it is still something that's still amazing to this day. And I love watching those behind the scenes things to see how they did it, because it's still inventive. It's still something I think a lot of special effects people still strive for. There's so many people who do werewolf movies who would kill to have a transformation as good as this, even with CGI.
He said something about that too. I saw like the little mini documentary that was I guess done after after like the new Wolfman movie that he worked on and everything. So he was talking about how he wants to do that, like have the regular makeup effects mixed in with the CGI.
Right. You use the best of both worlds. I think that's fair.
Yeah, but make a different transformation that nobody's ever seen again. And he wants to do that once more. If I had money, because werewolves are like my favorite I guess subgenre of horror. You know, I don't know if I ever told you that or not. But I love werewolves. Like, they just, for some reason, they're just a lot of fun, you know. Even the bad ones, you know, the ones people in their masks or whatever. I adore that. You know,
yeah, and this one has some different things. So we both watched the Blu-ray. I don't know who put it out or whatever, but the Blu-ray has like a more modern interview / documentary with Rick Baker, but there are also a couple vignettes from, like, one is behind the scenes of that they filmed at the time and it was put together at the time. The other one, I think it maybe was like a promotional thing to send to theaters to get them to pick up the movie or something. It was like kind of all about the movie, but then like behind the scenes too. And it was very like commercially. Mm. But it was all like super fascinating to watch that stuff. And I know that's some of the stuff that I saw when I was a kid.
Well, are you talking about the one that had like, it showed David Naughton actually getting the the stuff, the cast and everything.
Yeah,
that was so funny, because they were like, and here's Griffin Dunn, a co-star, watching, you know, as blah, blah, blah. And I was like,
and they made it comedic, like there were some comedic things that had the same tone as the movie, like whatever the voiceover guy, everything he was saying kind of went with that, you know, because mm-hmm. then they included John Landis doing his own stunt through the window and
yep, it was so whatnot. Great.
Yeah, so I have a lot more appreciation for that movie the older I get, the more movies I do, of course. And, you know, I mean, I'll never work on a movie of this budget, but I mean, they were super inventive. And
don't sell yourself short. You might work on a movie of this budget or more. You
never
know. Yeah, so if you say you're not going to, then you're not going to. But if you keep that in the back of your head. So
maybe someday.
Maybe.
That was kind of one of the things that they talked about was John Landis was like, I don't want to make, he grew up watching the Wolfman and everything and Rick Baker too. And they like, they really loved the Wolfman, but like, why does the Wolfman wear pants? Why does he walk with 2 feet? Why can't he drive a car? And they're like, they wanted to make the person turn into a wolf. And something that I think all of us figured, but like had never been displayed before, is that's gotta hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the fingernails coming out and the hands elongating, the snout coming out, like all that stuff, it's gotta hurt. And it really captures it, because he is not happy.
And we'll definitely get more into that, but I do want to mention that I did hear Rick Baker in one of the special features talk about how he actually originally wanted it to be the walking on two legs,
right, like a Wolfman. Biped.
Yeah, yeah, just like the original Wolfman, because I mean, they were working for Universal at the time. I mean, it
there's a million sense. References to it. It's definitely would have been a movie that they grew up on.
But I'm so glad that Landis didn't do that, because I mean, how many of them have you seen that do it? And most of the time it looks terrible. And the way that, you know, him wanting to kind of show all that stuff. And I love the fact that they did it with Blue Moon of all like songs, like, because like it just starts, because at first you hear Bad Moon Rising and you're just like, oh, this is cute. You know, right? Like he's bored. He's bored trying to find food. Or he's like, I'm not hungry. And he's whatever. Yeah. And then you hear Blue Moon, and it shows the moon, and you're like, uh-oh. And then it pauses for like, feels like forever on him just reading his book. And then out of nowhere, he's like, fuck! And just starts. You're like, you can feel his pain.
He just keeps going back to the refrigerator going, I'm not hungry.
Yep.
I'm still not hungry.
Why was he not hungry though? Like, I'm guessing because
he had turned into a wolf. Like, because that's usually a thing. I think when he's in the hospital, he doesn't want to eat.
Right.
It doesn't actually make him sick. But like in a lot of movies, it would make them sick to eat human food, which doesn't make any sense because dogs wouldn't get sick. But he wants. Yeah,
dogs love human food. That's all they want.
Yeah. He wants flesh, I guess.
Yeah, he wants to tear people apart. Mm-hmm. You know, that's understandable. You know, we'll get into a lot more stuff. There's some stuff I want to talk about, but I think we should probably go into like more of the story than throughout the story. We'll be talking about certain scenes,
but because I do have a tendency to geek out about this. So you keep me on the rails. Okay?
I'll try to. So, I'd seen it in my 20s. I'm now 40. So I'd seen it in my 20s. I don't know. I remember liking it and think it was kind of cool, but not loving it. And then you're right. I think like the next time I was like, oh my God, this is so amazing. I bet the next year, if I watch it again, I'll be like, oh my God, this is even more amazing. You know? Right. But it starts off these two American backpackers who are, I guess they're going on a tour of Britain, right?
Well, they're doing the, you know, it's kind of the American, pseudo-American dream. Like you get out of high school before you go to college, just go backpack through Europe.
Yep.
Which is what they're doing, you know, try to go have some fun, get into some debauchery, stay in some hostels, get laid, get drunk, you know, have a lot of stories for when you go back home.
Yeah. Which I mean, a lot of movies later, like Hostel to you know, kind of did like their own version of this movie in a way. So I think this movie, John Landis did say that there was a lot of movies that got inspired because of this movie, that weren't good, you know, like, or whatever. And, you know, that probably shouldn't have been inspired by the movie, but, I get it, because like for him, this was a horror comedy, you know, this was, so this was a chance for, them to kind of tell a different story. But so
I mean, it's a horror comedy, but with a lot more gore and a lot more seriousness. And apparently the tagline was from the director of Animal House, "Here comes a whole new animal." And I think people thought it was going to be hilarious. And when they first start, when the guys are like, they're in that sheep truck, and then they're just like, you know, they're just having their little silly talk about, you know, like the one girl that, you know, that Griffin Dunn wants to bang, and, you know, and all that stuff. It is very like just cutesy and comedic, you know? And so it does give you the tone of like, oh, this is going to be funny.
Well, which I liked, because like him talking, like everything that happens in the movie comes back some sort of way or whatever. Like it has a purpose. Yeah. Like them talking about that girl he wanted to bang. Later he mentions that she ends up hooking up with somebody else after his funeral.
Cried at his funeral, but hooked up with some dude from the funeral.
I thought that was so cute. It was like such a funny like bit of like, what would it be like if you were fucking dead? And you know, whatever. So that was really cute.
They don't really hang on the two of them doing their little shtick for very long. but they do it effectively. So you really do care about these kids, and you think that you get the impression they've known each other, because they talk about they've known each other since like middle school or something. And so you're already invested in their relationship, and they do mm-hmm. it really effectively in a very short amount of time.
Exactly. So yeah, so they're going through there and they wander up to this place over here, the slaughtered right. lamb, which is my favorite, like just my favorite thing of like, I don't know if it's because I've gotten older and I've seen so many other more movies and stuff, but I have way more respect when I saw this now than I've ever had before. Like them going to the pub and seeing it called the Slaughtered Lamb.
And it's got the wolf head, bloody yeah. wolf head.
And he's just like, where's the lamb? You know, right? Like, oh God, what are we getting ourselves into here? And they walk in and, John Landis said in a thing, like, he didn't think it would work when he did it. He was hoping it would work, and it did work. But what he was worried about was that there was going to be, like, people going, oh, this is like a Western, where people walk into a saloon and everybody just turns and looks, you know, at the people. Like, you know, every music stops, people stop right. playing darts, all of that stuff. And how many other movies? Like, Paul and I just watched a movie. I'll fucking say it now, even though you guys will have to watch it. They'll listen to our comment, our review of it probably in a couple weeks after this airs, is called Die Hard Dracula. And in Die Hard Dracula, it's about a guy going through Prague, you know, and he ends up going into this pub and everybody's eyes just look at him. Right. Now, there weren't that many people, as many people as there were in this movie, because probably money. You know, but I was just like, when I saw that now and then just saw this, I'm like, I get where a lot of.
But, you know, it's funny that was like, well, the unintention, I guess you could say, like, he didn't want it to be that way. But I didn't see it that way at all. Like, I mean, if you've ever been in a small town, you've ever had to stop for gas and ask for directions in a small town and you walk in somewhere. I mean, that's what people do. I mean, I grew up in that kind of town, you know, that if you weren't from there, if you didn't look like them, be like, what you doing here? You know, it's just the quaint British version of it.
Yeah. So they turn around, they look at them and they're like, you know, like, who are these people? And like from the very second, you can feel that these American guys are unwanted. You know, they don't want to be there, which is strange because, I mean, you know, they're. Like, who are these people anyway? Like, they're just people who live there in that town. I mean, like,
what? Yeah, this is kind of a point. I've never really discussed this with anybody, but it does kind of bug me that all they have to do is let the kids stay in there. They don't, like, sending them out inevitably will lead to their death.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving them in there does absolutely nothing. I mean, maybe it annoys them. The one guy, he messed up his darts, because they actually, like, you know, they point out, hey, you got a wolf's head and your sign and you got a pentagram over there. What's that all about? Big deal, you know? And you know, even the barmaid, she, you know, she has a lot of compassion. Obviously, they do, too, because they go out after them to look for them. But I don't understand kind of why the kids were ousted so fast.
Right.
I mean, they may not like them, but I just don't see why they would send them out to slaughter, no pun intended.
okay, so another question that now that it sort of bugs me right now, and now that you're getting into that, so they let them go out, you know, into the wild, and they get attacked by the and that because, one, you know, Griffin
because Dunk they're dumb teenagers. Well, you know, they're college age, but keep clear of the moors, beware of the moon.
Right.
Very first thing they do is step on grass, and then they're halfway through, and then they're like, be clear of the moors, beware the moon. Like,
yeah. And they're like,
dumb oops. Americans.
They said, oops. Yeah. but no, but see, what I'm trying to get at is, like, there's a scene where, you know, the scene where they save David from being completely mauled to death by the creature. However, I mean, because he got bit, he's got turned into the werewolf. Why didn't they just shoot him? I mean, I guess that's no movie, but, like, other than that, why didn't they shoot him? Because, like, technically, if they knew that he would become the next wolf, right?
Well, maybe they didn't realize that he had, I don't know. Maybe it's, you know, maybe they didn't realize he had gotten as mauled as much as he had. Maybe there's a spectrum of, like, you know, it's not like you get bit or you don't get bit. Like, maybe there's a gray area or something. I don't know.
No, the only reason I say that that's not true is because later the doctor goes to investigate, runs into them.
Yeah.
And then they're like acting like, oh, he's still alive. He's still, oh my God, he's on a, you know, like they knew.
Maybe that- Yeah. And that's the other thing too. They doctored him up and they, you know, they made up the whole story about the lunatic and everything else before the cops ever got there, of course.
Right. Because I mean, the guy was naked, but like, is a naked guy going to go around and slaughter people? Like, I mean, that sounds like a lunatic.
Right. Like, yeah, he escaped from an asylum or something and ended up in the middle of, you know, some little tiny burg. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know people hate like prequels or whatever, but it would have been cool to see the guy beforehand, or like how he got turned into a wolf and then became the lunatic in a, you know. Like,
yeah. Or just how it all started in this town, like the historical thing. That would be kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
Too.
I mean, I know they did something like with that, with The Thing, you know, like they did a prequel kind of story, but like that wasn't very good from what I've heard. I've never watched it. I only watched the original Thing. John Carpenter's original Thing. I didn't watch The Thing from whatever.
Which is a fabulous movie, even by today's standards, by the way. Mm-hmm. Not the thing, but The Thing from Another World.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. I saw that at the drive-in the same night I saw American Werewolf in London.
Nice.
I was pleasantly surprised.
Well, anyway, so like, yeah, so I mean, there's little things with this, but no movie is perfect. You know, there's going to be little issues or whatever, but.
And like, you can't question why like small town people do what they do. And, you know,
they have the pentagram, meaning like what did they call it? Like they called it pinta something or whatever.
Yeah, they called it something else, but.
Yeah, pentangle or something. I don't know, whatever. They got it wrong. Obviously, it's a pentagram. But they called it the five-sided star originally. And I was like, oh, why don't you just keep saying that? Like, that sounds cooler anyway. And so they had that. And I love it that they asked that question. That's when he like messes up on the darts. He's like, hey, what's that star doing up there? Mm-hmm. And then
I never miss at darts.
That guy was great.
Yeah.
And apparently it was his first feature film. And he did a good, fucking fantastic job. He was like talking about in the behind the scenes, how he was just like waiting for, like he had that big break. Finally, he was so excited. And then he noticed how that scene, that him saying the lines, was like his scene. So that's why he did it so like slowly, you know, because he knew it was going to be a close up on him and it was going to be very important. And that's why
this is like your 5 minutes right here, dude.
Yeah, you better stretch it out as long as you can. And it worked really well. Like it was perfect. And I mean, every cast, they had a bunch of English guys, like 98, like if there was 100 people, 98 of them would be English. And the only Americans were David and Griffin.
And I want to say that David Naughton was the only one who had to have a visa. So Griffin Dunn, I don't know if he has like dual citizenship or if he's British, but the only other American in it is Frank Oz. And he actually was born in Britain. So he was a dual citizen.
Well, what about, there's Frank Oz, but there's also, what's his name? Jim Henson. Is he like, do they count because they were like,
no.
they were Muppets. Like they were on the Muppet show.
Yeah. I think it was just like, they're, you know, the actors, the main actors.
Yeah. I think it was just the main actors.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like John Landis was American and stuff, but yeah, just as far as the cast goes, he was really the only true American.
They said that didn't actually count because he was also the director. So, you know, he could actually act, which is, I mean, it was a strange thing that they had this, like, I guess they had this, incentive to do it in England. But I mean, it was perfect because Werewolf of London, and I mean, if you watch all those movies, even the original Wolfman, it takes place in that, you know, in Europe, you know, so it's,
and it really gives you a good fish out of water type thing, because, you know, the discomfort for an American audience to be not just in a small town, but like a small town in another country, to be, it kind of actually makes me think too, can you imagine being like mortally wounded in a foreign country and being like subject to their healthcare? Like, I would feel very uneasy and very uncomfortable being like in a foreign hospital where things are done differently. Like, that's another like layer of just weirdness.
So yeah, so we'll get to that part. So they send him to London for, you know, his hospital stuff, because, you know, he's already been attacked and mauled. And he's there, he meets the nurse who he falls in love with, Nurse Alex, I guess. I loved her to death. Like,
she's adorable. She is absolutely adorable.
She was adorable. She was sweet. She was everything. Like, you know, I got it. And then the doctor, that my favorite, one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie was them talking about the, I believe that the embassy guy's a Jew, you know?
Yeah.
Like, stuff like could not be talked about today.
No.
Like,
no.
Some of the stuff like you just could not do today. But I thought it was amazing. And then,
and he's been out for 4 weeks, almost 4 weeks to the day, coincidentally. Yeah.
So, oh no, another full moon is approaching. So, which this actually made me like smile, because so many movies, you see a werewolf movie and they go on past the full moon, because like it's like 3 or 4 days. And I'm like, no, wait, this is wrong. You know, you need to have them. What?
It's like 2 days, right?
Yeah, it's 2 days. Technically 2 days, because like the first day of the full moon, and then the second day it's almost, you know, the full moon's almost gone, you know, already, you know, so you only get like 2 days to basically have this, and they did it in 2 days, you know, or whatever. So he's in the hospital bed, and he's kind of having these weird ass dreams, fucking amazing dreams. I'm like, oh my god. Yeah. I mean, I get it. Like, I would be like freaked the fuck out if like I was having dinner in a dream and all of a sudden my family were slaughtered by like,
we're watching the Muppets and here come Nazi zombie
Muppets
creature things. Yes.
Like, I don't know. It was so strange. It was like these people in these masks, they're going around killing everybody. And it was such a strange dream, but I was like, I was like going, what the fuck? Just like they probably, you know, when they were making it. But so he's having all these weird dreams. He's getting closer to the nurse, which I liked. Right before he's about to discharge, and it's a couple days before the full moon, you know, of course his friend visits him. Mm-hmm. And God, his friend looked amazing.
Yes. And if, as he goes on, every time we see Griffin Dunn, he gets a little bit grosser every time.
He's decaying, you know.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, there's like pieces of skin falling off of him after a while. And oh man, it looks great.
It'll be like what you would look like probably if you were in the ground at, you know, after like in a couple days, you know, because from what I've understood, when you die, like all that stuff like sets in quickly. It's not all, you know, it doesn't take like years and years. You decay pretty freaking quick.
Now, so, I would like to think that they would have like patched him up for the funeral, but that's okay. Maybe it was just closed casket. And
God, that's so sad. Maybe. I don't know. Like, how would you patch him up though? Like,
they can do things, you know, like a lot of putty and
I would close casket that bitch, because I don't think really do that. I would not want to have my family, you know, see me like that. But yeah, so it was, oh man, it was rough. And somebody was pointing, I think it was Rick Baker, was pointing out that you could see like a little dangling of like his flesh or whatever. Yeah. And like people would start noticing that and stuff and point that out. Yeah. And that's all they would watch. And I was like, I didn't see that. Like, I'm very not like observant when it comes to a lot of that stuff. I mean, I did obviously observe that he was decayed and it was looking bad, but I wasn't noticing that. And then they pointed it out. Now it's probably going to be the only thing
you're going to see.
Only thing I'll see. But he was talking and he was having like a normal conversation, like, hey buddy, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's like freaking his friend out. And so of course,
but he's a little pissy with him because he did just run instantly.
I hate to say it. Like if I had died getting attacked by a wolf and my friend, I mean, what is my friend going to do? Like attack the wolf, you know?
But, you know, you got to be a little like, wow, thanks. He had my back.
He had my back there.
He might be a little pissy, you know?
A little bit. But then again, like he was really nice to him throughout the whole thing. Even telling him that you have to kill yourself now, you know, he was really nice to him. Like, he's just like, dude, we can't have you keep killing people because you keep killing people. You know, they're going to come back just like me. In limbo.
And this ain't fun.
That's exactly what he said. This ain't fun. And I was like, I'd imagine. So it was kind of cool because you don't really see werewolf movies with zombies, you know. You never really see that.
Nazi zombies. Pup, you know, Kermit and Miss Piggy and
I mean
you got a little bit of everything.
That must have cost him a little bit of money just to have that, like have a
I didn't realize this till like very recently that the Muppet Show was actually filmed in London. It was supposed to take place in New York, like a rundown New York theater, but it actually all was filmed in London and they were there. And so the little line when Frank Oz, who's the embassy guy, he's walking out, you know, he's trying to talk to David and David's being a dick. He walks out and he goes, these kids, you know, you try to give them what they want and they just don't, you know, they're just not happy with it. Like that was actually a little nod to the fact that the Muppet Show had just gotten canceled. That was his little like F you kind of thing, which is funny, but sad.
It's funny, but sad. That's
But they were, I mean, they were there and, you know, obviously, you know, Henson and Oz did a lot of puppetry for a lot of different things, a lot of different movies. So.
They didn't do the puppetry for this movie, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. But I think it was just a matter of they were there and.
But there was puppets in this movie, and we'll probably get into that in a little.
Yeah. Oh, we will.
So to keep going with the story, so they basically decide to he's got to leave the, you know, he's going to be discharged. And she wants to make sure he's okay because, you know, he's kind of acting a little kooky.
Well, he's cute. He's a cute, mysterious American.
Right. So she's like, why don't you come stay with me at my flat? And I was like thinking, doesn't that get you in a lot of trouble? Like, you know, even
a little
back
bit of
then,
conflict of interest or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But
fraternizing with the patients. Who knows? But you know what? I think they were glad just to get him out of the hospital, too, though.
Well, I don't think they like so none of them when they discharged him, they didn't like I'm sure she told I know she told her friend the bigger, the heavier set woman that was in it, because the doctor comes in and says, you know, hey, has you know, has Dr. Alex seen, you know, seen him since he got discharged? And the lady looks over and goes, I don't know. And like you could tell that meant like, yes, she knows. And
wink wink.
Yeah. And then she comes in and says, yes, I did. So anyway, you know, and she thought, you could tell she thought, oh, I must be in trouble. Instead, it's because the doctor had gone and investigated.
Right. Yeah. He's starting to figure things out.
Well, yeah. Well, the more we forgot to mention, I guess, that the more he explained. So, or the guy explained what, or David explained what happened to him, you know, didn't really jive with what the original, whatever,
like the report,
report was. Like there was no way a man like a fucking psychopath could like rip out somebody's neck like that, you know?
Right. And that guy was like elderly and scrawny.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way that a guy like that could have done that to two able-bodied young guys.
But at first he's dismissing it because the cops dismissed it, because he thought, well, if the cops just dismissed it. Those cops, we forgot to mention them. Those Scotland Yard guys are just the worst cops I've ever seen in my life. They are inept,
yes.
Because the one guy is just trying to get this over. He just doesn't want to do paperwork or something. And he's just like, the other guy is just doing whatever. And he's trying to like kind of disagree with the guy. But the, like, he's, that's his boss, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, just like, can't.
Or at least the senior partner or something. Yeah. He's just kind of like, okay, whatever. I'll go along with it.
There was that awkward, like the guy shut the door. And then he goes to like go out the door and he almost like bumps into it. Did you notice that? Like,
yeah,
when you watch it, I was like, what in the world? Like,
yeah,
what is that? I guess that was supposed to be for comedy, but like,
yeah, I think they were sort of the comic relief. Cause then when they go to visit the doctor for the first time, he's like, would you like some tea? And the one guy's like, oh yeah. And then the other guy's like looking at him like, he's like, oh, okay. No, I guess I don't.
Yeah. Like, it's so strange. There's some little strange bits throughout it, that it was just like they were supposed to be kind of the comic relief during this stuff. And then the whole time they're just like, no, it's okay, you know.
Yeah, they're just kind of stupid, slapsticky kind of
characters.
Yeah.
And they literally thought, well, those were witnesses. So they said that that was the murderer. So, you know,
hey, dude, they're London police. They probably have worse stuff happen on the daily. You know,
maybe, but
on their own beat, you know,
maybe, but I mean,
especially, hey, look at me giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Well, it's that, and it's also, you know, it's the benefit of the doubt, but it's also like they were London police officers, right? Like that was their thing. They weren't the police officers of that particular little small town. So they were probably just called in because that town maybe didn't have a police department or didn't have really.
Right. You know, they're whatever. Just like, this landed on our laps. It's stupid. It's just like, you know, this petty little thing that we don't care about.
Like you said, like, they're probably just like, I don't care. Like, you know,
we had four prostitutes murdered last night. I don't care about this American kid who was somewhere he shouldn't have been.
Right. They do start worrying about it when the wolf strikes. So, you know, so they get back home or get back to her house. Things are going good. Like, they're hooking up, you know,
he's got a little moon dance going. Yep. And
then he hears his friend after he wakes up and he starts talking to him, and the friend is more decayed this time. And he's just like, dude, you got to kill yourself, man. You know, like,
yeah,
I just thought to myself, man, that's what would you do in that situation? You know, like,
right. Cause you're already like, I'm crazy. I'm talking to my dead friend.
Sure.
You know? You're already doubting. Is he right?
am I going to turn into this thing? Am I not?
Yeah.
And like, they said something in the, behind the scenes that it was like the idea of, I'm glad I watched the documentary, you know, this was amazing, but like, it was the idea of you, you know, dealing with a supernatural element, right? That you yourself are smart enough to think that supernatural things does not exist. Then you're face to face with it. What do you do? Right.
Right. Like, yeah. And you also know you've been through, like, if you're smart enough to know, I've been through a very traumatic event. I was in a, like, you know, a coma pretty much for 4 weeks. I probably have a brain injury. Am I, you know, is it up here? Do I have issues in my head, or is it really happening?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'd have to wonder.
And,
but Jack does make a very good argument. So
he does. In his decaying form, he was pretty much like, dude, you got to kill yourself. And, you know, like, this is the only way we can stop this from happening. And, you know, you're going to change. Like, he says that,
yep.
Like, you're going to change. You're going to turn into the wolf. You're going to kill. And I mean,
boy, does he.
And the girl's trying to help him too. Like, you know, like, kind of figure this out, but like, what can you do? Like, I mean, whatever. Anyway, he ends up like letting her go to work. You know, he has that gets locked out of his house, sees the dog and the cat both not like him, you know, because he's a wolf. He smells like the wolf or whatever. And so they're like, you know, at him.
You would think the dogs would like him.
No.
Or do you think the wolf is like a predatory
type of thing
towards a dog?
Yeah, well, no, because like...
No, like canine, like, yo, solidarity.
you have dogs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You walk dogs.
Yeah, true. They see another dog.
They start barking or growling at them. You know, it's true. More of a, like, protecting my
territory. Yeah, those little girls
and they're all smiling and laughing. I was like, the fuck? Like, why were they laughing about this? This is not funny. This is scary. When my dog growls at another dog, I'm not happy about that. I'm not, you know, my dog doesn't, and because he's just a little toy poodle, so he just kind of walks around. But you know, if you growled at a dog, I'd be like, hey, stop that shit. You know, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be laughing about it, but I guess they're
little girls.
Little girls are like 8-year-olds, you know.
Right. So they're on their own on the streets of London walking their dog. But hey, we won't talk about that.
Well, yeah. But, so they end up, so he ends up sneaking back into the house, which I was wondering if that was some kind of subplot thing or something, but I guess it never really comes back. You know, or whatever.
No, I think it's just part of the, I don't know, part of the comedy and the foibles and the, oh shit, you know, I locked myself. It didn't really have it. I mean, I'm sure there was a reason for it, but it didn't really, it didn't really come back into play.
No.
So
he sneaks back in the house, even opens the door at one point. And I was like, why did he leave the door open like that? You know, I guess it was maybe cold air.
Maybe
or
it's
something.
Trying to like, maybe it's trying to show that he's like comfortable. Where he is. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Maybe, you know.
And so he's, you know, that was the Bad Moon Rising. We get to hear that song, which I forgot how fucking dark that song is.
Like, yep.
You know, it's sung...
But the tone of it is really upbeat. The lyrics are not. Yeah.
The lyrics are like, I'm going to, you know, something about murder. You're going to murder tonight and shit like that.
Yeah. Don't go around tonight. They're bound to take your life because there's a bad mood on the rise.
Exactly. And so I'm like thinking, oh God, what? Going on here. And I was like thinking, uh-oh. And I think it was supposed to throw you off as to like what was going to happen to him, you know, were we going to see it then, you know, while they're playing Bad Moon, you know, Bad Moon.
I don't even know if it was to throw you off. I think it was almost like that, like to jar your senses, because they're still playing this song. It's super like, you know, you're like, you hear that song on the radio, you're like, do, 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 do. You know, like it's just that juxtaposition between that song being really upbeat and what's happening to him. I love the contrast of those two things.
Yeah, it worked really well. I think it's because of John Landis, honestly. I don't think many directors would dare like go there, you know, and do that. Or maybe they would try, but they wouldn't be able to do it like he did. So we get that scene. Amazing.
Transformation.
Well, like, yeah. And it kind of sets up, like, you go back to her work and you see her interacting with the kids, which was another thing I was just kind of a little thrown off about. Like, I didn't know if this kid had anything to do with, like, whatever. I guess you just nice. To
I think it was just cute. And it shows that she, you know, she's just, you know, it's just a cute little interaction and everything.
Yeah.
And just showing she's not worried about him.
Right.
That's another thing. She's just having, you know, having her
back to work. Over. Yeah. She doesn't think anything's going to happen to this dude. I guess he might have thought maybe, you know, but like he wasn't doing anything. I was surprised they didn't have one more scene with the dead, like with him there at that scene, you know, right before it happened, of him going, come on, man, kill yourself or something.
Right. Yeah.
But then,
it's happening.
It's going to happen. You're going to turn, but I'm glad they didn't, because instead we get Blue Moon.
Yes.
And it starts out with the wolf or the full moon, showing the full moon. Then, as I said, all of a sudden, fuck. And then help me. I'm so hot.
Hot. Yeah. So hot.
Soft as clothes.
The hair growing, the snout growing. That was one thing that I know you saw in the Rick Baker thing. He said they worked like months on the snout extension. They had like 3 or 4 different puppets. you know, and all this stuff. They worked all this time, and then they like were like, it was like 10 seconds on screen, and they were so disappointed until they went to the premiere, and like everybody was like clapping when that happened, and they're like, okay, I guess it's cool.
Oh, they got really happy about that, because like they stood up and they like cheered, because I mean, it looked really fucking cool, you know, like, I mean, I get it. But like, I love how Rick Baker, you're right, I saw that thing, and Rick Baker was like, you know, we worked months and everything on
building these prosthetics and everything else,
and then all like, of a sudden John Landis would shoot 10 seconds of it and then be like, cut, you know, all right, we'll move on, we got it. And he would go, wait a minute, what do you mean you got it, you know, we need more. And he was like no, we got it. And they did not, and that means John Landis is a great director who knows how to save time, you know.
Okay, but in saying that too, we do have to address the white the elephant in the room, that John Landis and his want for things to be a certain way, and for them to be fast, and for them to be grandiose, also got 3 people killed from the Twilight Zone. So yeah, I mean, so you could say great director. I always kind of wondered, like, I kind of always have a weird thing. Like, I appreciate his work. But yeah, I have that in the back of my mind. I'm like, you killed Vic Morrow, dude.
You could take some more time and, you know, whatever. I get it.
Yeah. You know, safety is paramount.
I mean, I guess in this movie, there was nothing that had nothing to do with safety. But you're right. Yeah. For that. When it comes to a safety issue, you know, time is right. Very much appreciated.
Yeah, because cannot cut corners. So
no, but no, I get
it. But we're not talking about that. We're not talking about him.
And look,
his work as a whole. We're talking about this.
That was definitely an accident. Like if anybody ever brings that stuff up, usually I'm always like, because like some people, there are people who are really upset about that sort of situation, and they will hate on Landis for that. And I usually say, look, it was an accident. It was not, you know, it was, look, he did cause that problem, but he, you know, like nothing like that has ever happened since, you know, for him. And he's still a fantastic director. Like it was just a really bad situation. And
yeah.
I'm sorry for everybody that happened to, you know, and everything. So, but
anyway, back to this movie.
Back to this movie.
Yeah. But yeah, the transformation is great. And then he goes out on the town, which is another thing that I didn't realize till I watched, because I got this Blu-ray like a couple months ago when my internet just totally tanked. I was like, I realized how many movies I didn't have physically. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I don't have American Werewolf in London. So I got the Blu-ray.
I just got the Blu-ray too, you know, like recently, yeah. Which I showed you, and you're like, oh my God, you got to watch the extras and stuff. And I did.
But one thing that I didn't realize that I really appreciated was that when the werewolf, and this is a little bit more like the second time he's unleashed, but like when the werewolf is running around, it's still a guy in a suit with his hands in the front paws, you know, head, and then they've got him laying on like a table, which is why you never see the back legs of the werewolf, because it is actually a guy running with his hands, you know, they're pushing him with that table,
like a wheelbarrow kind of thing, like it's almost like a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool, because I'm like, you know, they could have just easily used like a puppet or an animatronic or something, but for it still to be controlled by a human and, well, a group of humans behind him.
Right, exactly.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I loved it. But there was some animatronics, I think, for some of the puppet stuff later, like when you get to see the actual creature, when you just see the creature itself, like making like at the later on in the porno theater and stuff, where he's just like, you know, right?
I was under the impression that they were like, no, we didn't build like a, you know, a puppet, like not a puppet, we didn't build like an animatronic. It was always a guy in a suit.
Okay.
And even when Griffin Dunn, which we talked about puppets too, like when Griffin Dunn is in the theater, he's like, he's completely lost all his flesh. There's no way they could, you know, they've been building up his flesh the whole time. you know, with all the prosthetics. So they had to do a puppet, and but it was still Griffin Dunn actually controlling
the puppet. Mouth. Yeah.
Yeah.
While he talked or whatever.
Yeah. Which,
actually rewatching it, looking at that, that scene, there are a couple times where it doesn't necessarily match up, I thought. And I was like, oh crap, you know, because now that I know it was a puppet, you know, it looked a little weird, like when he like moved and you could sort of hear it. Like there's one point or whatever that I was like, ah, that doesn't necessarily match up.
Oh, yeah, I still didn't notice that,
but anyway, so yeah, he's out on the town. That was one of my favorite parts of the whole movie. Him going into London, because I mean, it's called American Werewolf in London, right? And so I was like, oh god, I'm glad it wasn't like all set in the hospital, because they didn't
like
have
Jason
money.
Takes Manhattan, Vancouver.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was very much London backdrop, you know. They had Piccadilly Square. I mean, it was definitely.
So my, you know, it texts these two poor, like, very sweet, very nice, like couple that are just going to their friend's house to have have dinner, I guess, and they get attacked and eaten. And then the guy, I just love that scene. That's one of my favorite scenes, is the guy's like, just has like his like little bourbon or martini or whatever he has in his glass. And he's just like, oh honey, I'm, you know, I wonder why they're late, you know, or whatever. Yeah. And they're like, oh my god, there's something going on out there. It was like, oh, nothing's going on.
Yeah, they're just like British yuppies.
Yeah. And then she's like, why don't you go check? And so he goes to go check, and he's like, hello, is that you, blah blah blah, you know. Yeah. There. And then he's like, and then he goes squish.
Yeah.
I just cracked up. I was like, oh god, what did he just step in? like I was expecting him to go, oh my god, my shoe.
Yeah. Hey, do you have any gray poop on?
But yeah, so stuffy yuppie guy. And then
the dude in the subway, or the tube as they would call it, I thought that was kind of weird. I always think that's weird. Like, what is there ever like a time of day or night in London that there wouldn't be people in the subway?
Yeah, that was a little question of mine, is like, why was this guy the only one that got like let off the train or whatever, you know? And
yeah,
and everything. And why
we don't have panhandlers, or you know, like, you know, or anything, or we don't have like, you know, a few drunken party goers. We don't have anybody. It's just kind of weird.
Yeah, it was completely empty. It was almost as if they like had an empty lot, and they were like an empty subway, and they were just like, yeah, let's just, you know what I mean, or something.
Ew. Notice all the Wendy's posters. I only noticed this the last time. In the subway there are a ton of Wendy's posters.
Must have been
I don't know why. There's also See You Next Wednesday posters, which we'll get to in a minute, but yeah. I don't know if it was product placement or not.
I think it was product. It has to be, because you can't use Wendy's. Even back then, you probably couldn't use,
right, like, yeah, they would have had to have covered them up or something. Yeah, it had to have been product placement.
But that's better, because I didn't even notice them, and they got their product placement. So you noticed them, but I didn't notice them, but like, they got it, and most people probably might not notice that, you know, or whatever. Yeah. The people that are watching it like 10 times, 20 times, whatever, they'll probably pick that up and be like, oh, that's really cool.
Suddenly, I want to shake in a very waxy yellow cup. I don't know why.
But let's talk real quick about that amazing scene of him going up the escalator. Yes. And we follow him up the escalator. And see, this is funny, because we did Evil Dead the last time, right?
Right.
And Evil Dead was like my favorite horror like film or whatever. And then this is your favorite horror film. So it's kind of perfect kind of thing. But I feel like this movie is one of those films that you can definitely talk more about than Evil Dead. I don't know, because there's so many cool like things in the whole picture of the movie. You know, there's so much going on. But this scene, like them going up there. Do you know, like, I don't know if you listened to like some kind of, I did not get to any of the behind the scenes of this shot, but like, did they use a another escalator or something, like a one that actually also went up, because that was fucking cool. Like they were following the guy up the escalator.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if they, this would be a question, I guess I'd have to ask John Landis how they did it necessarily. But my question is, did they actually remove my dad pointed this out, maybe they used a button, you know, that makes it switches it up so it goes up instead of down, you know?
Maybe.
I didn't know if you could do
I just seriously didn't even consider it, but yeah, it's a cool shot. But yeah,
it is a cool shot, because if you think about it, you can't, if you're going up the stairs, even if the stairs are not moving, right, going up the stairs and following somebody that's going up an escalator like that, it's got to be difficult unless you are literally on the same same step, you know, as the other person across from them. Then you can get that shot, and that's what I think happened. Is I think they either took I don't know if there's ever been a
situation, or they have a really 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 big dolly that just, you know, which that could be it too.
Because they did have a lot of money. So,
But that was that was a really tall escalator. And yeah, that whole thing, and some of it's maybe forced perspective to a certain extent, because, you know, you're looking up the escalator and it just seems like it's infinite.
Right. You know, and you're also watching this person going up the escalator and you're following them. It's such a fucking cool shot. And I was just like, wow, I mean, if there was ever a shot that John Landis has done that's very much like a Hitchcock style shot, that would be it to me. Like that,
probably.
As a filmmaker, I'm like, oh, like I wish I could shoot something like that. You know, I mean, I probably could if I figured stuff like that out. But, you know, it was just really good. And it's quick, you know, it's not it's not like, you know, a minute or 2 minutes, you know, of that. It's like literally like maybe 10.
Boom, 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 boom. Yeah.
Yeah. And it happens, but it worked so well that I was like, oh my God, just like the transformation, just like all these other cool, like, you know, little shots. We forgot to mention also I don't know if it's after the subway guy, but there's also the group of people, the old men who are just hanging out with their dog. And I don't know about you, but I know we've talked about dogs getting killed.
Yeah.
And everything. Thankfully, we never see anything, or we don't even hear the whimper. But we do hear a funny line where they're like, "That's not Winston." I was like, no, duh. That was a fucking growl. Like that was definitely not Winston. But yeah, it was kind of funny. And so they die. And all of them become, you know, zombies.
They become like Jack.
Yep.
And then David wakes up the next day naked in the wolf pen at the zoo. And this is one of my favorite sequences of the movie, where he's like naked. He's like walking around trying to figure out what to do. And
goes in the bushes. It's very cartoony.
Yeah. Right? And he gets the balloons from the kid. And he's like, "A naked American man stole my balloons." Like, what? You know, and he takes that coat. And he's just sitting there like waiting, you know, in this like women's coat, you know.
Did you notice I posted that line on my Facebook last night?
Oh, no, I'm banned from Facebook for 3 more days. So I kind of have been avoiding it.
Sorry.
Yeah. I bullied a meme. And I got cited for bullying. So,
I get in trouble all the time because I say the word kill on Facebook and they don't like it. And I'm like, you know, you can say, literally, you can say kill, like I killed somebody on, what is it? Or I'm going to kill blah, blah, blah. You can literally say that in a post. You comment that you're
banned. Oh, yeah. Oh, you know? Yeah.
I'm like, I like, these bots don't make any sense, but whatever. But I usually say it with horror. It has to do with horror. It's like, you know, killer mommy or something. And then trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, anyway.
Whatever.
sidetrack.
Yeah, that's a very, that's one of my favorite sequences of him trying to get back to the apartment and everything. And
she's in the coat and she's just like, where did you get that coat? You know?
Yeah.
When he talked to the English boy, I thought, oh my God, that's so creepy and so weird. Nowadays you would definitely.
Oh yeah. They wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Nowadays you definitely not have that scene because I mean, he's literally naked right in front of that kid when he steals the balloons. So I'm like, Jesus Christ, you can't do that these days, but you know, whatever, they did it back then and it was perfect. It was so funny and it's such a weird, weird thing. They go back, he goes back home and tries to explain and he's feeling good about himself. He doesn't understand what happened, but
he feels energized or reinvigorated or something. Yeah.
The power of the wolf or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
He's got all this energy. So they decide to go see the doctor and that's not going to be a problem until they find out on the news.
There were a bunch of murders last night.
And uh-oh, you know, what happened? And so now he's freaking out, wanting to get the cops to arrest him.
Yes. Prince Charles is gay.
Charles is gay. The stuff about Queen Elizabeth is a faggot, you know? Yeah.
That was Prince Charles. That's all I remember is that one, but
it was so, oh my God, it was such
he can't possibly get arrested, which is hilarious. And you know, really, if you think about it, this is where the third act starts, basically, when they find out about the murders. The third act starts, and it is one of the shortest, most action-packed third acts in a horror movie.
Yeah.
Because I think at that point in time, I think you've only got about 15 minutes left in the movie.
Right.
Maybe 20.
Maybe 20.
Because he goes to the movie theater that we keep talking about, and Jack introduces him to all the people he killed the night before, which is hilarious, as they watch the bad porn, See You Next Wednesday.
Right. Yeah. And she saw a bunch of that sign or whatever. And
yes. And that's a thing. That's a thing that he plants in all of his movies. There's a reference to See You Next Wednesday in all of his movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even his first one, Schlock.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Probably started there then. Okay.
Probably, I would say. But there's always a little bit. This one, obviously, you know, now we actually get to see what this movie is, which is the most idiotic porn ever made.
Oh God. It was so, that was the funniest scene.
I'm sorry. I have the wrong person.
It's even weirder because he literally saw what she looked like. And then she's like, I don't know you. And he's like, sorry. He walks away. And then David looks at his buddy, Jack, and he's like, good movie.
Good movie. Yeah.
What the fuck? Watching
you've got the gamut of the couple that's pretty pleasant still, they're all just mangled,
nice couple, and then
the subway dude's just pissed off, they all are in varying points of whatever, but they're all like, oh yeah, it's like, well, how am I gonna do it? Oh, how about a gun to your head? they come up with all these ways for him to kill himself.
And then he's like, what if I hung myself? And they're like, oh, you probably just choke yourself to death. And they're like, well, why doesn't he just choke himself to death? And he's like, and he was like, this is my friend. I'm, blah, blah, blah. Right. Which I'm like, even in death, he's being very sweet to his friend. Once again, his friend didn't kill him. Help him survive,
but he would have died as well, but it would have been, now that we know this, we know that it would have been better had he died, but again, we wouldn't have this movie.
It kind of sucked that it was literally if they had just waited three more minutes, those people would have came and shot the wolf before before the friend got killed.
Again, that's movie.
Well, yeah, otherwise there would be no movie. But yeah, so anyway, or maybe they did. I mean, maybe they were just waiting around.
Maybe they were waiting.
Yeah, they wanted one guy to die, and then they were like, oh shit, let's save this one, because
shifty little bastards.
I don't know. They are. Well, I mean, you could tell when they did talk to the doctor, and the doctor, you know, and they were very like,
they didn't want trouble. They didn't want trouble for them and their little town and whatever the hell was going on there.
I think that's why they were happy that that he went to the hospital in London, like, get the fuck away from us.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want this American guy around here anymore. So anyway, yeah, we're in the porno theater. They're talking about how to kill each other or how to kill him. And then, he turns into the thing, and he can't help it, you know, he hasn't been able to figure out how to kill himself yet, and so he turns into the werewolf, and
he does like a blob homage out of the theater.
Yeah. And my other favorite bit is that guy just comes up, because at first it sounds like he's literally like jacking off to porn, you know, right? So he's making all these noises, so the, I guess, theater checker guy is checking on him, you know, or whatever, and staring at him. He's like, go away. Yeah. You know, like, yeah. I'm turning, you know, right?
Yeah. Like, it's not what you think. Really, really, it's not.
Look, my hands, they might be hairy, but, you know. Yeah.
That's not why.
But yeah, so, anyway, so he turns into this thing and eats the guy, you know, eats the theater checker. I guess somebody sees it, or whatever, they call the cops. The cops come in, and the one cop's like, whoa, I thought he was going to get eaten. I was so like ready for him to get killed, but they shut the door. They slam it on him.
And then basically we have like a Springfield Fiery Mob kind of thing. Like, everybody just is like, what's going on at the theater?
I know. And I'm sorry, but if you hear there's like something on the other side, like, why do they,
why are you going towards it?
Why are you staying there? Go away, like, run, you know? Mm-hmm. Because
they were all onlookers too. Like, none of the civilians were actually trying to help the police blockade the door.
Just, like, they were watching, just, like, what's going on, like, over here? Yeah. So then it escapes and runs off. And then you see this awesome running of it, you know, and everything through the town, and eventually it gets into, like, cornered into its own thing, and the cops are there, and the girl tries to talk to him, you know,
right? Because we didn't mention this before, but they were talking about the Wolfman movie at one point, and then he was talking about the only person that could kill him is somebody who really loved him in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that's when, I mean, this is the most abrupt ending, like, of any movie that I can think of. He's cornered. She's like, wait, I'm going to go talk to him. You know, she's kind of looking at him like, David. He's kind of doing the puppy head tilt, like, you know, and then she's like, I love you. And then he gets shot. And it's over. Like, I mean, that's it, you know, and I know there are a lot of people who don't like that ending. But yeah, I'm like, I like it. That's the only way it can end. How else is it going to end?
Yeah, he can't survive, you know? Like, he can't, you know, he can't keep, because, you know, like...
Right, he can't have, like, I mean, what are we going to do? Like, okay, and then he runs away, and then they run to, you know, Madrid. And then we have the sequel, American Werewolf in Madrid, where he has to get chained up every 4 weeks or something. I mean, you know, just whatever scenario you come up with is stupid.
Yeah, like, and we can talk about this. There's the American Werewolf in Paris.
Paris.
Yeah. Where it was, I mean, that's actually the first one I saw, because, you know, I don't know. I was a big fan of Tom Everett Scott when I first saw it. Because I love Dead Man on Campus and whatnot. And so I watched it and, you know, thought it was kind of dumb.
I probably saw it and have just pushed it out of my memory.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't remember much about it either, but I do remember seeing it. And I remember seeing it before I saw this one. And of course, this movie is just amazing, and it ends with him dying, and that's the only way it can happen. Like, as you know, if all those people are going to find peace, if there's not going to be any more murders happening, that he has to die. And I really love, we forgot to mention, he does go to a phone booth and speaks to his his sister, and he's trying to tell her, like, look, tell mom and dad I love them. And there's this like really heart kind of like, it's a brother sister, like,
yeah, because he's like, okay, young. Just yeah, and she's just like being kind of a butthead to him, and he's just kind of like a butthead back, but like, okay, come on.
Yeah, I'm trying to be sentimental here.
Yeah. it's a very tragic ending, but it's a very beautifully tragic ending. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. I dig it.
I was wondering why. I mean, maybe it's money issue for them, but why wasn't his parents there on coming to see him if he's been in the hospital for so long?
Well, okay, it is across the ocean. They do have two younger children at home, mm-hmm. And he is in his 20s. I mean, he is technically an adult, but yeah, it does seem like the parents would be there when he was getting released or something. Maybe they were there and then they just left him. I don't know.
Yeah, you never know. You don't know.
Yeah, I thought about that too, because like, even if I'm like, you know, 45 and I'm in a hospital somewhere in a coma, I think my parents would like, you know, get on a freaking plane.
Right. I know my parents would. And
yeah.
I didn't understand that. But then I was like thinking, now that I'm thinking about it, it's probably because they're going to get any more Americans. Which, you know,
it was superfluous to this story, because if his parents were there, then we wouldn't need Nurse Alex.
Right. They would have just took him home, and then it wouldn't be an American Werewolf in London anymore. It'd be a American werewolf
in London, or in Idaho, or wherever the hell they're from.
Yeah. For a bit, but then to Idaho, which is, remember, Jason Part 8 should have been called Jason Takes a Cruise to Manhattan. You know, which this movie did take, you know, a lot of it was in the hospital, getting to know things, whatever. Then finally, actually in London, you get to see London and everything, which is a lot of fun. So, I mean, all in all, I'm very glad you picked this movie, because it was a lot of fun. You know, there was a lot of really cool stuff set up for it. I want to eventually listen to the commentary with David Naughton and Griffin Dunn. I've loved Griffin Dunn ever since I first saw him in My Girl, you know.
Which,
I used to love that movie. I used to watch that movie on repeat all the time. And he was one of my favorite characters. He was like the teacher that she had a crush on or whatever, who, you know, obviously couldn't date a little fucking child, you know, and stuff or whatever. So he, you know, what? So it was like so cute, the movie. And so when I remembered that Griffin was in this movie, I got really excited. I couldn't wait to, and he is so great. He's so wonderful in this movie. And David Naughton, who I've met at car conventions, he's just the nicest guy in the world. Like, if you ever, I don't know if you've ever met him at any.
I have never met him. I would probably swoon still. I mean, he's kind of a silver fox now. I mean, he looks completely mm-hmm. different, because he's much, much, much older, you know, and he was so like dark haired, you know, whatever. But yeah, I'd probably still swoon.
He's such a sweet dude. Like, he's such a nice guy to all his fans and stuff. And even though I'm a Moore fan now, so like, I can't wait to see him again and be like, you know, I might be a little like, oh my God, like a little fanboyish, you know, kind of thing. Because I really, I really adored him in this movie. Because him and Jack and Alex make this movie, you know.
Right. Without them, it would just, without them, it wouldn't have like the heart and human aspect.
Yeah. I mean, all the rest of the characters are wonderful. Like the doctor and everybody at the pub and, you know, all the people that he kills, you know what I mean? Like, everybody's awesome, but like, those three really just make this movie something special. And I'm very glad, because what I remember hearing is that Universal wanted a name, you know, they wanted somebody big in that role. And I think that would have overshadowed the movie, honestly.
Yeah.
I think that people would have gone to see it because, let's use a more recent name, but like Tom Cruise. If Tom Cruise had been the had been the main character, whatever, the main actor, it would have been a Tom Cruise movie. This having been two actors who you don't really know, and you're kind
they
of
were
like,
they were name enough to but they weren't the major draw for the movie.
Right. The major somebody said once that if you're gonna have a horror film, you know, like a real big horror film, you can't let the actors outshine the creatures, the creature itself. The creature is what people are going to see the movie about, you know? So that's why horror films are very good at basically introducing us to Jamie Lee Curtis or Kevin Bacon or whoever's in all these like horror movies that at that time had no names, you know, like they weren't big names, but because they were in this movie where they were sort of outshined by the monster itself, the serial killer or the werewolf or vampire, it didn't matter because people are going to see it for Jaws, you know, not Roy Scheider necessarily, you know, that kind of thing. So it's one of those things where I just like looking, I mean, other than I'm looking at this right here is The Shining, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, Jack Nicholson was a little bit bigger at that time period than the movie, you know, but he was the killer, you know. So if you're going to be the killer, you know, if you're going to be the monster, you know, you're going to be a big name. I think Betsy Palmer, you know, to use that as an example. Who, by the way, I don't know if I ever told you the story, but my mom actually worked with her.
Oh, nice.
My grandma was a director, play director. And for one like thing or whatever, she had Betsy Palmer come in at that time to help do some kind of like, you know, workshop or something. And my mom got to meet her and work with her and everything.
Nice.
So I've always kind of, like when I told her, oh, I love Friday 13th because of Betsy Palmer, she always brings up the fact that she met Betsy Palmer and everything. I think that's just the sweetest thing. And my grandma, the same grandma, got to meet Vincent Price on a cruise.
Ooh, wow.
You know, so like, I'm so jealous of that. Like, we don't have, like, the only thing I would imagine is if I was on a cruise with like Robert Englund, you know.
Yeah, and that's the thing too with horror conventions and us being kind of like, I mean, we're not like in the industry, like we're not like way up here, but we are in the industry, and like, so we have accessibility to a lot of these people that we grew up watching, and you know, bigger names or whatever, and it's like, it's not the same, like Vincent Price wasn't doing horror conventions. You weren't like going down to the bar after hours and like having like a steak, you know, with him.
Like you would with like
you guys
Kane
are just
Hodder.
In the same. Yeah. You just wouldn't. And it's just a different time. And, you know, obviously, you know, just different society. But
I mean, it was cool one day. I was at George Wendt was at like one of the horror conventions, and I was at a bar, and he walked in, everybody goes, Norm. And I mean, being in that situation is fucking cool, you know?
Yeah.
As a fan of everything, of movies and television. But like, it's one of those things where you now, you know, like as a horror fanatic, you know, you do get the chance to like meet David Naughton at these things and everything, and tell him how gush about how much you love his fucking movies, you know, and shit. Or I like to say Zach Galligan, you know, I fucking was going crazy talking to him, you know, and everything. He's such a nice guy. But that's the thing, you know. I don't think Griffin Dunn's done these things. He hasn't done.
He was not a horror guy.
Yeah.
You know, David Naughton wasn't either, but I mean, you know.
He kind of became a horror guy. Like, he did Brutal Massacre comedy. He did a couple other horror.
There are people who embrace it, people who don't, and it's cool either way. You know, just because he did one movie of his whole career that was horror, but just so you know, everybody, there's a lot of money to be made, and horror fans are the best.
Yeah.
But I guess it's time for us to rate this movie, and I forget. What is our scale?
Oh, Jesus. Did we do a scale the last time?
Did we do 1 out of 5 or 10?
I'm going to say 1 out of 5, but let's do both right now. So
okay. It's a 5 out of 5, 10 out of 10, crank it to 11. This for me is one of my favorite movies. Is definitely my favorite werewolf movie. It's definitely in my top 5 movies, not just horror movies, but movies of all time.
I would agree with you. Absolutely. 5 out of 5 or 10 out of 10. I don't like, even the little small issues I have with the movie don't really like matter. Like they're just so small and minute and the grand scheme of things. This is a really well done movie. Like this is not a movie it's a movie that from start to finish, they knew what they were doing, you know,
yeah.
And they made something fucking special that nobody had ever done before.
Yeah.
By the way, I do love that I heard on the making of that, Rick Baker was talking about how he had got hired for The Howling right before An American Werewolf in London and had the same idea. He was going to basically take their idea of, you know, the transformation scene. And John Landis calls him up and it was like, hey, I got the money for American Werewolf in London. He's like,
yeah. Cause they had talked about it before. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was like, damn it. I'm already on a werewolf movie. And he's like, well, you're not using the same idea that we had. And he was like, And he was like, you bastard. He said that. Yeah. He's like, you bastard. How dare you like steal our idea, you know? And now and it was like, look, all right, look, I'll like oversee this project, but I'll let Rob Bottin, I guess is his name.
Yeah.
Take over on Howling and I'll concentrate on Werewolf in London. But he was like, I need 6 months with your actors to do like, you know.
Yeah. Which is kind of crazy, but.
Well, I mean, nowadays it'd probably be easier and a little quicker. But back then, I can imagine it wasn't easier to get that stuff. And they had a lot of work they had to do because nowadays they have, you know, like nowadays he just walks in, says, oh, let's do this life cast real quick. You're done. You know?
Yeah.
But back then it was like probably a bigger, harder thing to do. And, you know, I respect this movie like up the wazoo. Like this movie is so fucking good. I can't wait to like watch it again and again and again, you know, because now that I've rediscovered it in a way, and thanks to you and hopefully other people listening to this has seen it and, you know, has fallen in love with it as well. If you haven't seen it and you listen to our whole thing, well, go watch it.
Go watch it. What are you doing with your life?
I know. Like, even if we described it, it's you need to see the fucking movie. It's amazing. I think what was the next one? I think the next one's Puppet Master that we're going to be doing next month.
Well, whatever it is, it's one of your choices.
It is.
So yeah, Puppet Master sounds good.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. Full Moon, man. Like before Full Moon was, you know, doing evil bong movies for the rest of their life. Yeah, I mean, when they had money and shit.
When they weren't cranking out movies like they were Troma.
Yeah, like they kind of went into this trauma stage in their life, which is fine, you know, it's just not the same. So it's one of mine. I think it's going to be the Puppet Master, and I'm really excited for that. We may have a guest, we may not. I think I like it that we do it together. I mean, we talk enough.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if somebody else were here to go on for like another half hour?
Yeah. Especially since we picked these movies, both of us have a lot to say about them. So,
yeah. And I'll rewatch Puppet Master before and probably listen to the commentary and stuff. I know Charles didn't direct the original Puppet Master. So that's a really fun thing is like Charles Band produced it, but didn't direct it.
Yeah.
But I can't wait. That's going to be a lot of fun. And then the next month after mine will be yours again. So we're going to keep switching it off. This is a 5 out of 5 or 10 out of 10 for me. Like absolutely 100%.
Perfection.
Yep. So thank you, Rebecca. This is awesome. And everybody else, tune in next month for a brand new episode.
We'll have something good for you.
Definitely. Bye, everybody.
Bye.